This is Patty Cotton, and you're listening to Leadership Secret Number 2, Persuade Others, Inspire Action, How to Increase Your Influence Quotient. I don't understand why it didn't work, my client Barbara shared. I had a tight argument, and I'm a skilled negotiator. But I couldn't move the needle on Don's decision. Barbara, the problem isn't your argument, it's your approach. You're negotiating rather than using persuasion. You aren't going to change someone's fundamental beliefs in an hour, I countered. Well, I just can't give up on this. It's too important to the business, she said. Yes, I agree. What's needed here is not negotiation, it's persuasion. Let's sit down and talk about how to get this done. Barbara is not alone. Many people mistakenly try their negotiating skills when persuasion is needed. And mastering the art of persuasion is just as important as negotiation when it comes to moving the needle and getting business results. Negotiation and persuasion require two separate psychological processes, and depending on the situation, you may wind up using both. But here are some key differences and some steps to start growing your influence factor by up-leveling your skills in persuasion. Bob Bontempo, professor of Columbia University Business School, gives a nice comparison between negotiation and persuasion. Bob says that negotiation is the mutual exchange of resources for mutual benefit, whereas persuasion is changing what someone believes about the resource or outcomes. Negotiating is usually quick and can be expensive. Persuasion is free, and it takes longer to work. In other words, if you're negotiating, you can walk into a meeting and say, "Hey, can we talk? This is what I want. What do you want? And let's figure out how to make this happen for the both of us." And you can usually come to some sort of mutual decision within an hour or so. But you can't do that very effectively. But you can't do that very effectively when there are high stakes involving someone's core beliefs and convictions. Persuasion is necessary in this case. And it's a more gradual process along a continuum over time, made up of small movements, much like dating someone. Is this manipulative? Absolutely. We manipulate opinion every day. And persuasion, just like any other tool, can be used for good or for bad. So I'm not going to talk about ethics here, but I'm assuming that everyone that is listening has best intentions in mind and is sticking to strong ethics throughout the persuasion process. Your motives are pivotal to this process, and having everyone's best interest in mind is key. Beyond this, you will also need some solid credibility with the person you need to persuade. For more on building your credibility, revisit my Leadership Secret Number 1, Defining Your Personal Leadership Brand. But back to increasing your influence factor through persuasion. Let's say that you and Chief Decision Maker John are top management and you're working together. You and John have been commissioned to generate an additional $20 million over the next 5 years to help expand the business. You've tried the conventional pathways to generate this money, but these have not worked. And you've heard about using a strategy involving red monkeys. It's been working in other places successfully, but you also know that John harbors a deep and unreasonable bias against red monkeys because of some circumstance in the past. In fact, just the phrase red monkey is enough to set him off. So you aren't going to change John's mind about red monkeys just by walking in and saying, "I'm here to talk about how I believe that a red monkey initiative needs to be included in our 5-year plan, and I want to talk about how we can make that happen beginning next week." Because that conversation is not going to yield results, not good ones. This is a case for persuasion, because a lot hangs in the balance. John's beliefs are in the middle of this. You and John need to work together to make this happen. You need to succeed in this initiative because your career hangs in the balance. If you can pull this off, you can put yourself in the pipeline to be considered for higher leadership or write your ticket to wherever you want to go. So I'm going to teach you the four keys to begin flexing your skills of persuasion to move others along, and we're going to use the red monkey illustration to see how this works. Your first step is to pinpoint the common interest. You have to be interested to be persuaded. So, in the case of you and John, what are the common interests? You and John are both interested in meeting the goal of generating more revenue, and you haven't yet come up with any initiative that's going to work to do that for you. So, for illustration's sake, that's your area of common interest, that you both want to raise the $1 million, and so far neither of you have come up with any strategies that will work. Number two, identify what will pique curiosity or create doubt in a current conviction or belief. What's the other person ready to hear? What are they not ready to hear? In the case of the Red Monkey Initiative, you recognize that John is ready to talk about generating revenue, and he's interested in exploring additional initiatives to help reach the goal. He is a risk taker, and so he's ready to talk about being open to identifying those initiatives that will generate the income. You also know that he is not ready to hear about red monkeys as one of those ideas. So a first conversation might go something like, John, I know we both want to see that increase in revenue in the next 18 months so that we can start thinking about expanding, and the company is waiting for us to come up with the solution. We've tried some things, and the strategies that usually work haven't seemed to pan out for us. Am I right? I think we're both ready to look at some out-of-the-box ideas to make this happen. What do you think? Now, John is going to say yes, because so far you're talking about things that he's ready to hear and talk about. Although John is risk-averse, he does admit that the tried-and-true strategies have not worked, so it is time for out-of-the-box thinking. Now, step three is you want to make it his idea. Ego is not a factor here, results are. So remember, you've pinpointed the area of common interest. You have identified what will pique his curiosity. Now you're going to make it his idea. So, what have you done? You've gone back to your office, you've done another research sweep over a few days, and red monkeys still rise to the top for the answer to generating your revenue. So, you pop by John's office, and you start with something like, So, John, I think we both agree that what we've tried hasn't worked. As we've talked about it, you've mentioned it will take something outside of the box to make this happen, something we haven't tried before, and I agree with you. What naturally follows from your idea to consider new ideas is to look at those things that we may not have considered in the past. Am I right in hearing this? Getting John's agreement by talking about the point of common interest again and reinforcing it is key, as well as getting his agreement that he will look at new ideas. Then you might try something like, I've done additional research about what is working out there right now, and I have a couple of things for you to look at. Are you game to walk to the edge with me? John agrees. Now it's time for step four, which is asking the $3 million question. This is my personal name for a question I love to use often when negotiating or using the art of persuasion. Let me give you a little background on it. I once asked for $3 million, and I got a yes in 30 seconds. But was it all me? And was it all because I was standing there with the person, David, who held the power to considering this request? Absolutely not. My team and I had moved this relationship along the continuum over time. We were up against much. The entity in question had never gifted more than $1 million to any one organization per year, and there were several key stakeholders to convince, as well as steps to take, to prime them to consider the request. So do not try the question I'm going to give you until you have a foothold into the relationship and the process. When you do, this is a great way to finally surface objections and meet them with suitable answers. Now here's the question I asked. David, under what conditions would you consider a gift of $3 million? David was surprised and stammered, Well, we've never gifted more than $1 million to any entity, and I'm not sure our board would agree to do this, and there are all kinds of legal complications to making a proposal work.
Besides, this whole process might take well up to 18 months. I answered, "So, David, what I hear you saying is that you and I would need to sit down and agree to terms, take it to our attorneys for review, present it to the board for their consideration, with the full understanding that the process of approval and funding may take somewhere between 12 to 18 months." "Well, yes, I guess that's what I'm saying," David responded. "We can do that," I said. "Let's set a date to sit down." And it worked. So let's take this question and bring it over to the situation with you, John, and the Red Monkeys. Once you've taken those preliminary steps to affirm common interest, create curiosity and doubt in John's current plan, and he has admitted that he's open to considering initiatives he refused in the past, now it's time to sit down with him and your research findings that show Red Monkeys rising to the top of all the strategies you've tried. And now you ask the question, "John, we've talked about considering new ideas, and we agree that it's going to take a calculated risk to make this happen, something we haven't done before, and something that in the past we may not have considered. I have some findings here that may be surprising to us both, and here they are. You can see that Red Monkeys rise to the top as the number one strategy working for initiatives like ours at this time. I know you have not been keen on considering them in the past, but these are challenging times, and we both agree that it's time to think outside the box. So, under what conditions would you consider including a Red Monkey initiative in our plan?" John will no doubt have the color drained from his face and counter with his objections. "Red Monkeys are dangerous. Red Monkeys are costly. Red Monkeys are difficult to manage and they may frighten people." "So what I hear you saying, John, is that you can see the value Red Monkey initiatives bring to other companies here in my research, but in order for this to work here, we would need to ensure that they are properly vetted for safety reasons, that our use of them stays within budget, and that the monkeys are cared for and contained in a way that we don't risk any management problems or frights. Am I right?" "Well, yes," John counters. "We would have to do all that for me to consider the option, of course." "John, if I can come back with a plan that supports your concerns, would that suffice for you?" "Well, I guess it would." "Great. John, we can do this. I'll be back with a plan in 10 days. I'm Patty Cotton, and it's been my distinct pleasure to share with you a top leadership secret that the most successful have used to help grow their leadership and be more impactful. It's up to you now. What will you do differently because of today's learning? Where in your work could persuasion help you to leverage your results? I challenge you to begin flexing your persuasive muscle today.